Back with you on 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Turtle hanging out with you in the Kia Studios until 10 o'clock. And we are continuing our Falcons coverage on the WadeFord.com hotline as we waste no time and welcome in one of our favorite guests, Tori McElhaney, senior writer, reporter, and host for AtlantaFalcons.com. Tori, before we get into the actual game, so many injuries, unfortunately, to talk about right now. Let's start with the offensive line. What were the updates? What's the latest we were given today?
Yeah, so based on the injury report, Chris Lindstrom, Matthew Bergeron did not practice today. Storm Norton also did not. Chris Lindstrom left the very end of Sunday's game with a foot injury. He is considered day-to-day. Raheem Morris said today that the plan is for him to be relatively good to go by this weekend. That's the hope, at least. Matthew Bergeron is a bit of a different story. He's a bit more week-to-week with an ankle injury that he suffered in the first series of the game on Sunday against the Patriots. Doesn't really seem that likely that he is going to be able to go this weekend. If he cannot, which that's how it's looking, it'll be Kyle Hinton who will slot in at left guard. And then there's the whole thing about Storm Norton, who, you know, he started the year off on IR. He made his return, at least opening up his 21-day window to return a couple of weeks ago. He was practicing, all was well, and then this past Friday he did not participate. Today he did not participate in practice, and when Raheem Morris was asked point blank if he had a setback, he didn't really provide too many answers clearly, but he did say that it wasn't quote unquote good news for Storm Norton. So that's kind of overview, particular offensive line, that's what I got for you.
The other move that they made was bringing in a new kicker, waving Parker Romo. Zane Gonzalez should be, I think, Tori, a familiar name to most of our audience. But what do we know about him coming into this weekend?
Yeah, he's a vet. He's been around for quite a while now. I think a lot of people saw what he did with the Washington Commanders. He's someone the Falcons actually brought in early, was having his struggles, and they ended up going with Parker Romo. And now that Parker Romo had his struggles, they've now looked to Zane Gonzalez. And I mean, it's up in the air. I mean, at this point, you ran out there three different kickers over the course of 10 weeks of the season. So, I mean, if he can make an extra point, that's better than the alternative from last week. So I really don't know where the kicking game goes from here. We will see, because I honestly don't know that much about Zane Gonzalez outside of kind of what he's done the last couple of years. So when the lights are bright and when you're in Germany, like, can you make these kicks? Because you're going to need to.
How much tougher of a task did it get for the Falcons offense with the Colts making a splash addition of one of the better corners in the league in Sauce Gardner?
I mean, it's a huge deal, and I think that it will be interesting to see how much of a runway Sauce Gardner gets. I think we will see him. It's just a matter of how much and who he ends up lining up against. I know a lot of people were saying, like, oh, this game in Berlin could be the Sauce Gardner-Drake London showdown, but I don't know if that will be the case in all actuality. Like, I actually went back and I watched the 2023 game against the Falcons and the Jets up at MetLife Stadium, and Sauce Gardner actually wasn't lined up against Drake London all that much. He was mainly lined up out to the whoever was out wide to the right. That was his part of the field that he was patrolling. So we don't really have a giant sample size of what a Sauce Gardner Drake London showdown could look like, and we also don't really know what the expectation is for how much he would even get to see time on the field in Berlin this coming weekend, considering he just got to Indianapolis, I believe, today, and basically both teams will be in Germany leaving tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a good point, because the Jets did not use Sauce Gardner as a quote-unquote traveling corner, meaning a guy who just is stuck like glue to the other team's best wide receiver. He had his zone, and he stayed there. So to Tori's point, it'll be interesting to see how and when they use him. Okay, we know about our guy, 7, best running back in the league. Raheem Morris has called him the best player in football. Hard to argue. But I think the guy this season specifically that's given him a run for his money is the guy that's lining up behind Daniel Jones, and that's Jonathan Taylor. How important is it going to be to slow him down?
It is paramount because he, I mean, to your point, like what he has been for this Colts offense is kind of one of one right now. And I think that he leads the league right now in enforced missed tackles. And that is a testament to him and what he's been doing. But also I think like he's averaging 5.7 yards per carry and has one of the most extensive workloads of any running back right now in the league. I mean, it's slowing him down. No one has really found the right way to do it. His numbers attest to that. I think the Falcons have a really big test because I do believe that after what happened out in San Francisco against Christian McCaffrey, the Falcons' run defense has actually been better in the last couple of weeks, especially this past weekend up at Gillette Stadium against the Patriots. Now, can you continue that? We know that the Falcons have this attacking front, and so you kind of do lose a little bit of ground in the run game, but you can get after the quarterback a bit better. That said, you need to continue to build upon what you saw in the last 2 weeks, and it's one of the biggest tests that you're going to face against Jonathan Taylor.
Talking all things Falcons with our buddy Torrey McElhaney, senior writer, reporter, host, AtlantaFalcons.com. Make sure you check out all the great work they do on the team's website. All right, when it comes to the quarterback matchup, Daniel Jones, after we know what he didn't do, I guess it's better to phrase it as, Torrey, in New York, but he has certainly found a brand spanking new shiny home in Indy and has been great despite a rough outing last week. All the other games so far, he's been phenomenal. And then you get Michael Penix, who, you know, despite the loss last week, put up a very, very solid performance with 3 touchdowns to Drake London. Are you expecting this game to be a high-flying affair, or you think it's going to be more of a defensive struggle with the two teams?
I mean, this is the Colts, I believe, are the number one scoring offense in all of the NFL. I mean, they are no strangers to getting in the end zone, and at times over the course of this season, the Atlanta Falcons have struggled to do the same. So it's one of those things where I do believe that the Indianapolis Colts are going to get theirs. They're going to move the ball. They're going to score. So it's always about the answer and kind of the tit-for-tat nature that you almost have to have, the Atlanta offense has to have, and when you're going up against this Indianapolis offense. And that's kind of where I land on it. Like, I think you saw last week against the Steelers, the Colts have this anomaly of a game where they turn the ball over 6 times. That's not what they've been the first 8 weeks of the season. And so I don't think you're going to get that version of the Colts in Germany. So you have to capitalize when they do make a mistake, which I think could potentially be not a lot. You have to capitalize. You have to score points. You can't be having these 3 and outs over and over the course of a first half. You've got to stay in lockstep, and you got to score a lot of points because this is a high-scoring offense.
How do you feel like the coaches have portrayed so far their happiness or lack thereof with how Michael Penix has developed throughout the course of this season? Where do you think they're at? What have you heard in press conferences and otherwise? Because I think it's tough to remember sometimes, because there's expectations on this team to end a playoff drought that's lasted 7 seasons, that the quarterback has only made 10 starts in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately where they are. I think they're realistic about that he is still a quarterback within his first true slate of NFL games. And because, you know, last year was 3 starts, and you're coming in at the tail end of the year, and you don't know exactly kind of what, how much is being catered to him versus what was being catered to Kirk Cousins. And now you go through a full offseason as a starting quarterback. But I do think that you go into the season also understanding that Michael Penix is a rookie quarterback and that he is still getting his feet wet in the league. He's still understanding kind of what throws he can make, which ones he wants to make, how he's seeing things, how things are progressing for him. So I think that from coaches' perspective, they like what they've seen of course, at times, but then also at other times he has these rookie mistakes. He has these intentional groundings, and it's just like limiting these rookie mistakes and understanding that there's going to be growing pains amongst the growth, but trying to find the best ways possible to help him out in those situations. That's why the Falcons getting the run game going again is so vitally important, because there is a direct correlation between the Falcons being able to run the ball and winning games versus not being able to run the ball and losing games. And that to a certain extent, you hear all the time, a young quarterback's best friend is a dynamic and consistent running game. And that's very true, and I think we're seeing it play out with Michael Penix in this offense as well.
Before I let you go, Raheem Morris went on with our guys Dukes and Bell today, and he made a point to talk about how he can never waver emotionally and how that emotional roller coaster is not a ride he can participate in, because his job is to steady the ship at Flowery Branch. Do you feel, being there as often as you are on a daily basis, that there is a sense of urgency around the building, or do you feel like the team is taking after Raheem's lead in that sort of stoicism?
I kind of go back and forth on it a little bit. I think that there is this understanding amongst the whole organization that this team is not playing to its ultimate potential and that the results aren't there. And the fact of the matter is that you've lost three of your last four games. You've been unable to run the ball. That is your bread and butter. That is what you have said. It is your lifeline. You have a 25% completion rate on third down. Like, there are some key issues and key problems that have popped up over the course of every single loss for this team at this point of the season. There has to be a sense of urgency, because ultimately, as much as people can say that there's a lot of football left, if you go out and you lose to the Colts and then you come back home to Atlanta and you host the Carolina Panthers at home and you lose to them, like, your odds to potentially get into the playoffs drastically plummet at that point, to the point where the only way that you can crawl out of that hole to even give yourself a fighting chance is to win out. And that includes beating the Bucks. That includes beating the Seahawks, the Rams. I mean, to me, there has to be this sense of urgency. You have to get things straightened out. It can't just be this, we'll find a way, or we'll get there eventually, or there's a lot of football left. No, you're at the point in the season where you got to turn it on or turn it off, and you got to find out where that is. And I do think that there is this level of understanding that that's where they are.
Torrey, great stuff. You heading out with the team tomorrow?
I surely am. We'll be flying through the night.
Well, safe travels, and we look forward to all your coverage on Sunday here in America, bright and early, 9:30 a.m. Appreciate you, Torrey.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. That is Torrey McElhaney, senior writer and reporter, AtlantaFalcons.com. Great stuff from her. All right. When we get back, a brief, very brief respite from football to talk about football. Yeah, that football. Football. The other kind of football. Tata Martino, if you missed it, coming back to the A. We'll talk about it with Jason Longshore next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. Yes. Tata Martino is coming back to be the next manager of your Five Stripes. Atlanta United is reportedly in the final stages of an agreement to set to return to Atlanta. We know what happened the first time around. Can that magic be replicated? Let's find out on the Wade4.com hotline. Let's bring in our guy, Jason Longshore, all things United. You know we go to him, Longshue on Twitter, and the team's analyst on match day. Jason, your initial reaction to Tata's return, are you surprised? I know there had been some bubbling rumors, but does it make sense? So are you surprised, and does it make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you're talking about somebody who had success here, no question, has had success in the league during his time in Miami as well. You're talking about somebody who's very well respected in the game, and he was available. So, you know, there was always, once the decision was made to move on from Ronnie Dyla and Tata Martino was out there, there was always the possibility that a conversation would be had. Now, what's fascinating is the reporting in early October, and this is, again, before the Atlanta job was open. So I don't know the timeline of everything behind the scenes, but early October, probably around the time of the LAFC game for Atlanta United, the reporting out of South American top-tier sources was that he had a verbal agreement with LAFC to take over when Steve Cherundolo departs at the end of the season. Now, verbal agreement is very different than a final agreement, but that was the reporting before this job opened. It's fascinating how everything has shifted. And look, it's still being reported at this stage. I think you've been around Atlanta sports long enough, and especially how AMBSE operates. Like, stuff does not get out. There are not leaks generally. Right. And when you're dealing with these sorts of situations and it starts to get reported, it's usually coming from outside the area. It's usually coming from, you know, whether it's agents or people in other countries that are starting to link these dots together. And this stuff had been bubbling up a little bit over the past couple of weeks. So does it make sense? Yes. Am I surprised? A little, just in the sense that there had been at least some form of a relationship built with LAFC. And it is tough the second time around. It's never a guarantee that coming back to a place you've had success, you have the same success. It doesn't mean you can't, because we've seen both sides of it play out. But is it the exact same? No, you're not building a team from scratch. You have a team that you're inheriting. And my assumption would be that seeing the roster and seeing the players that you have and knowing there's going to be some changes, because every coach makes some changes to make the team theirs, Tata Martino looked at this roster and said, I can make this work and I can go there and have success, because he's not coming here just to be here. He's coming here to try to win, and he sees a team that he can win with.
You led me perfectly into my next question, which is, as it stands right now, before changes are going to be made, as you just acknowledged, how close do you think this roster is in the image of what he wants to do?
It's a good question, because there's some elements that are going to have to change. And I think they would have changed with anybody. Whatever manager you bring in was probably going to look at the fullback situation and want to upgrade there. Brooks Lennon is in an option year. Ronald Hernandez is in an option year. That's your two right backs. So there's an opportunity to go bring somebody in that either you've worked with or you know and you value. A wing, you're going to need to get some more production. I feel like we talked about it a lot this season, about the other wing spot. Now, that leads you into a conversation about Alexi Maranchuk and Miguel Almiron and how you play them together. And there's a variety of ways to do it. I think the idea of getting hung up on formation and position and saying that players play one and no more than one, and teams play one formation and no more than one, it's just factually incorrect. Can they both play 10? Yes. Can one of them play on the wing? Yes, both of them can, actually. You have all kinds of flexibility. Think back to when Tata Martino was here in 2017 and 18. We typically saw a 4-3-3 shape with two holding midfielders behind a 10, two wingers, a pretty basic shape. But in the playoffs in 2018, he shifted to a 3 kind of what you want to call it, a 3-5-1-1. Again, this is why formations are overrated. Like, he went to three center backs as the key, and Miguel Almiron wasn't really playing as the 10. He was playing more as a second forward. Can you find different ways to utilize two very talented players in Almiron and Maranchuk? Yes. Do you need wingers to do that? Possibly one of them can play on the wing. Possibly. You see a shape that is becoming very common right now with teams playing a forward, which right now would be Lotte Lott, and you're going to have to get production out of him, and that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for any manager here. and two tens behind him. You can play a 3-4-2-1 with Latte Lott in front of Almiron and Moranchuk. That could be fascinating to see, and that's a shape and a style that we've seen Tata Martino play over the years. It's going to be very interesting to see how he envisions the puzzle pieces fitting together. I think, as we talked about as the second half of the season unfolded, I feel like you upgraded the spine. Bartosz Schlich had an amazing season. In AME High, Juan Berrocal, two very solid center backs. Deion Gregersen, if he can stay fit, is another very, very good center back. I like Steven Alzate next to Bartosz Schlich. I feel like that group as a base in the middle is very good, and that's something that Tata Martino is going to want to build around if he's going to take this team over. It's the way you deploy Almiron and Moranchuk, what you get out of Latte Lott, and it's got to be more than you saw this year. And then depending on how you fit the puzzle together, what other pieces do you need? Is it wingbacks? Is it fullbacks? Is it a winger? That's going to be a very interesting chalkboard session with Chris Henderson and Tata Martino and how they see this team coming together for 2026.
For those who aren't familiar, obviously, we know the success early on. What is his leadership style like?
It's a good question, because I think there's an image of Tata Martino of a very laid back, very relaxed, calm manager on the sideline. And I think that's just an image. You know, he's a very intense guy. I think you've seen it during some of his other stops. I think you hear the stories behind the scenes about how he's very forceful and very demanding of what he wants and making sure that he gets that. He doesn't go into a situation if he doesn't feel like he's going to be able to have that control that he wants. That's a non-negotiable for him in his career. So I think he's a guy who is very good in creating the vibe that he wants from a group. Is he a guy who's going to be buddy-buddy with the players? No, I don't think so. Is he a guy who is going to utilize his staff to build some of those relationships and be that key link between the two? Yes. I think he's become maybe a little bit more of a manager versus a coach over the years, which is very typical. You see, in this sport especially, I think we see it in, I think, the college football a little bit, where, you know, young coaches are very hands-on in activities during the week. And as they get a little bit older, maybe they climb up that ladder on the scaffold and they watch from above, and maybe they trust their staff a little bit more to direct and be more hands-on. Maybe they oversee things a little bit more. I think as he's aged and gotten more experience and sees the game differently, I think Tata Martino has become more of that manager than that running every session on the field in a training session and in a match week. So it's going to be interesting to see what his staff is like. I don't know, out of his usual people that he's worked with, who is available, who's not, if he's changed that up over the years. That's going to be a very interesting thing to watch for. And I think the other thing to keep in mind with an appointment like this, I think one of the reports out of South America is that it's an agreement for a season. He doesn't stay places very long. He's a manager who comes and goes. So I think you do have to, if you're Atlanta United, think about, okay, can he come in and stabilize this and get it better and build? And that could be a 2-year process. But is he going to be here past 2 years? He wasn't the first time. He hasn't been anywhere at the club level since he was here. I don't know. So can you start succession planning while building with Tata Martino? Is that possible? And that's going to be another interesting thing to watch for during this whole process.
Well, before I let you go, I think, again, a nice segue into my final question is, this is,
I read your mind sometimes.
Yeah,
Chris.
No, it's true, Jason. This is a league in MLS where you can make an abundantly huge turnaround in a very short period of time.
Yeah, that's a key thing. I mean, you're seeing it with Philadelphia right now. They didn't make the playoffs last year. They were the Supporter Shield winners this year. They're already into the next round of the playoffs. It can happen. And the question with this roster is, how can you create that flexibility if you want to go make big swings and bring in players, you know, are there players that Tata has worked with in Miami that are available? Are there players that he worked with at the Mexican national team after he left Atlanta available? Other players? That's going to be a big question, because when you go through the Atlanta United roster as it sits today, yes, there are some option decisions to make, but the majority of your, let's say, top 15 players, your starting 11 and your main substitutes off the bench that you're going to see play a lot of minutes, the majority of your front end of your roster is under contract through this upcoming season, at least. So do you try to transfer guys? Do you try to trade guys? Do you try to create openings that way? It's going to be fascinating, because Tata Martino typically doesn't come into a situation unless he can affect building the roster that he wants to build. Now, the good thing in this case is he worked with Chris Henderson in Miami, so you have that familiarity there. He knows the league. He knows realistically what he can and can't do. He's not a manager coming in from overseas who doesn't understand the salary cap and the league roster rules, for example. So he would not take the job if he didn't have ideas about things that were realistic that he could do. You can go from not making the playoffs to being a contender the next season. It can happen in Major League Soccer. Can it happen here in Atlanta with Tata Martino? Let's compare notes when we get to preseason opening and we have a better sense of what the roster is going to look like for 2026, and see if enough change has happened where, on paper, I hate to say it, like you were going into 25 and like you were going into 24, on paper, you were seen as one of the best teams in the league. Can you be that again in 26 with some changes? We'll find out over the next couple of months.
Jason, appreciate it. As always, when can the people catch you next?
I will be on The Intersection tomorrow night with Noel White. I know we're going to be talking about Tata Martino on The Intersection. That'll be after NFL football. You can always catch me at Long Shoe on social media, and then I'll be back with Atlanta Soccer Tonight on Tuesday, and I think it'll be a very special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight next week.
All right, appreciate you. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Jason Longshore there giving you all the latest on the return of Tata to the Five Stripes. Hopefully he can bring the same type of glory that he did the first time around. We shall see. Coming up next, back to the Falcons conversation. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. Is this a must win on Sunday? Sure feels like it to me. And also, Big O has five true and false questions. We'll get to all that and more next. Close out the 7 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas Tonight. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. If you missed Raheem Morris on the station today, you'll hear that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll also talk some Hawks as they get back to 500 and hopefully can continue to hold water without Trae Young being in the mix. But right now, we got to waste no time, because I haven't had a chance really to talk to Big O much this week because we've been so busy talking Falcons on the phones with you, and I love to do so. But while we have a second here, why don't we get some true-false questions in on the Falcons?
Alrighty, Chris. The Falcons do not have a first-round pick in 2026.
They do not.
Not that they will use a 2026 pick on the position I'm getting ready to ask you about, but do they use one of their 2026 draft picks and take a kicker? True or false?
Ooh. Depending on how Zane Gonzalez does, I'm going to say false just because they don't have enough picks next year to do that. They're down a couple of picks next year again. So I'm going to say false, but Oren, that is not a bad representation of the state of where things are right now for the Atlanta kicking situation. Lord have mercy if Zane Gonzalez misses a PAT or misses a field goal this Sunday. I don't think our hearts.
That's not good. No.
Our collective hearts. I don't think we.
Oh
can
no!
Take
how about
it.
Would it really be that bad though, Chris? Seeing what we've seen already this season, I mean, I think the real surprise would be if we see a kicker consistently make kicks.
Yeah, but Zane Gonzalez is just good enough to be able to do that. So if he does that, I think they would consider sticking with him before wasting a draft pick on a kicker, just because if they had a full slate of picks, I think you would be on to something with, you know, maybe a sixth or seventh rounder. But because they don't, they are precious.
They're precious, yes. They're precious. All right, question number two. Let's say that they win on Sunday versus the Colts. I did this before with the after the Buffalo game, and I sort of went down the list and gave you the next five, which was San Fran, Miami, New England, and Indianapolis. Some of the next four.
Didn't go so hot.
Did not go well at all. After Indy, though, they get Carolina. They are at New Orleans. They are at New York. And then you have Seattle at home. The next four, after Indianapolis, they'll win at least three of those games. True or false?
No.
False. No? Oh, my gosh.
Oren, why? How could I sit here as a talk show host of any repute and sit up here and lie to the audience?
But you're playing like two of the three of the worst teams in the league.
And?
Carolina's already beat them.
I mean, the Saints are the Saints. They give you trouble every year.
If you lose to the Jets, man. I don't think the Jets want to win ball games right
now. You know why they could lose to the Jets? You remember the last time Justin Fields played the Falcons?
Yeah. He started the season last year against Pitt.
He looked like Cam Newton. No, I'm talking about with the Bears.
Oh, that's right.
When he was the starter with the Bears, he looked like Cam Newton back there running around, making big-time throws and just running all around. The Pittsburgh one, that was the sixth field goal game. That was funny. You lost to Chris Boswell single-handedly. That's how you started the season last year.
That is true, yes.
But, yeah, the last time Justin Fields was with the Bears and he played the Falcons. So anything can happen, Oren. Again, I do not
award this. You aren't optimistic for the positivity, though.
No, I do not have any optimism right now. And this team is, again, I said it earlier in the show, I'll say it again. I do not give this team the benefit of the doubt over anybody. Haven't shown it. Sorry.
All right. Question number three and four. Two questions related to Sunday's Colts game. True or false, Drake is going to be shadowed all day Sunday by Sauce Gardner.
No, false, because that's not what he does. I was talking about this with Torrey McElhaney earlier in the hour. When he was with New York playing at his best, he was a one-side-of-the-field corner. He was not a traveling corner. He took whoever was lined up against him and did not follow around the opposing best receiver. So I would think that they would try to do, especially with a short week for him trying to get up to speed, what's best for his skill set.
He's coming out of concussion protocol, too.
Yeah, so I don't think they would ask him to do something he hasn't been doing for the majority of his NFL career. So I would actually predict if he does get some matchups versus Drake, they're not going to be the majority of the snaps.
All right, question number four. Based on how you've answered previous questions in this true or false, don't think this is going to be the answer that people want to hear, but here goes. The Falcons hold Jonathan Taylor under 100 yards rushing on Sunday.
No shot. You know why? Because he only had like 50 last week, so he's going to come out
with
reckless abandon. But that's okay. You could still win the game, even if he has over 100 yards.
You're less likely to, though.
A lot less likely, but it's not impossible, because you know why? Danny Dimes turned back into a pumpkin last week.
Yeah, he did.
He threw accounted for five turnovers.
Old school Danny Dimes game.
Yeah, man. So if you can get that rocking. And we saw Pierce and Walker be able to disrupt the quarterback last week. Let's get more of that, shall we? And then you'll be just fine. So I don't think it matters really, but I'm going to say they don't. But I don't know if it matters.
All right. And the final question here, sir. Or the games that are coming up after Indy, those aren't guaranteed wins. So
none of them are. How can we sit here and say that watching this team lose by 30 to Carolina, lose 34-10 to a bad Dolphins team, and get your face smacked in by New England last week when it mattered most in crunch time, Dukesism, that you trust this team against anybody? You cannot in your right mind, other than if you're just being a homerific fanboy or girl, say that. Sorry. I know it's harsh, but that's the reality of where this team is right now.
All right, then my final question, sir. This Falcons team will win 7 games at season's end.
What would they have to go? What is the rest of the season record for that to happen?
All right,
so they have 3 wins right now.
3-5.
Okay.
So in order to get to 7, you have to win 4. So 1, 2, 3, 4.
4
5,
out of your
6,
last, what, 9?
7, 8. You have to win 4 out of your last 8.
And they got the Rams.
Excuse me, 9. So 4 out of your last 9.
Right? Okay. So they got, and in that company are the Seahawks, Bucks, Rams, Panthers again, Saints twice. Oof. Yeah, for God's sake, Oren. Yes, true. They have to. I mean,
positivity right there, Turtle.
Oh,
yes.
If they win, that's
going to get your coach fired. But
yeah, if they win 7 games, I don't know if I can do this anymore, man. I mean, I'm gonna, but like, oh man, you think the phones are hot now? Oren, we're going to have our eyebrows singed off by the callers from the electricity coming through the phones.
They're going to be mad.
Oh, my goodness.
Mad, mad, mad.
We're going to need to get like a Captain America shield in here to just ward off all of the negative.
Go away with the negativity, y'all. Go away with the negativity.
Oh, no, but that's what we're here to do, man. 404-726-0929. Coming up next, what did the coach have to say about the state of the team right now headed to Germany? Dukes and Bell caught up with him. You'll hear that conversation next. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10.